And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I mean, obviously, you know the draft lottery, the lower you go, and you and I have both been on the same page. The organization could have done a few different things in all of this, but I'm sure we'll get a chance in the next hour to lament all of that as we welcome in our listeners to the live room. Picking 11, which is exactly where they were slated to pick based on their point totals coming out of the regular season. So they didn't move up, they didn't move down, there really wasn't a lot of movement all the way through, except for the Chicago Blackhawks, who get the number one overall pick. But from a Canuck perspective, I know there are people that were, you know, rubbing their lucky rabbit's foot and putting on their Canuck toques and jerseys and whatever with hopes that just maybe rubbing Patrick Alvin's bald head or something like that. I don't know. Was it rigged? Buddy of mine just texted me and said it's rigged. Come on.
I've been in the room. I'm like one of the, there can't be a lot of reporters who've actually seen the drawing. Like, I've been in the room. I'm telling you, it's legit.
I'm sure it is.
And you know I wouldn't protect the NHL for no reason.
I know, but you know it would have to be legit, right? Like, if that ever got out that it wasn't legit, the teams, well,
I've told the story before, but the year I went was 2018, right? So the Canucks picked Quinn Hughes that year. So they lost the draft lottery that year. And, like, Canucks owner Francesco Aquilini was also in the room to observe the drawing. And I don't think it's a big question as to why. He wanted to make sure. Like, owners are invited.
Yeah, for sure. But so, that just tells you, right? Like, if it was rigged, the owners would be in on it. And if they're not in on it and it ever got out, that would be it for Gary and Bill and all of it. Like, there's no way. So
no way.
It wasn't rigged. Extra 11. What was Francesco's reaction that year when he came in to watch? What was his reaction?
No, I mean, the Canucks are always disappointed. The other good reaction I had was the 2019 draft lottery. I was also there. And so, you know what? Sorry, maybe I was there 2017 and 2019. Because I don't think I went in 2018, now that I think about it. The Panthers, we drafted Grigory Denisenko that year. And we, like, missed the playoffs on the last day of the season. So we probably didn't have good enough lottery odds for me to justify the expense of, like, using my travel budget to go spend a weekend in Toronto. Because
why would you want to spend a weekend in Toronto?
Well, I love Toronto.
There had to be a Blue Jay game.
Well, I have friends and family there, and I was living in Florida, so it was always
nice. All right.
Anyway, the fact is that the funnier reaction, though, was Jim Benning in 2019, which was the Hughes draft, and of course that's the year the Devils moved up with worse lottery odds, or similar lottery odds anyway, to the Canucks, and the Rangers also moved up from, like, similar lottery odds to the Canucks, right? And I just remember Jim Benning coming and sitting beside me, and he was just like, oh man, I hate this event. And we just shared a laugh at the moment, because of course I was wise to the lengthy and sordid history of Vancouver Canucks lottery luck. Now, today's not a bad outcome for Vancouver, right? I mean, there was a 13%
chance that they moved back to 12,
which they've done so often. In fact, I think they've lost more slots at the NHL draft lottery than any other team since it moved to the multi-draw format. Now, That said, there's a spiritual level of like ick attached to the headliner of a golden generation of Vancouver hockey prospects, right? Like Connor Bedard is the headliner of a group of young players out of our city right now, five of whom are likely to go in the first round in Nashville in June, right? Bedard's the headliner. He's the best prospect to ever come out of Western Canada. He's from our city. He is a rabid Vancouver Canucks fan. And he's an evolutionary sniper. He's got a shot with a voice unlike anything we've ever seen. And every time he finds Twine at home, that irksome, unvaried, repetitive Fratelli song, Chelsea Dagger, will play. And there's something that I can't get over. I hate it. It upsets me. So that's the only drawback here, right? Like the Blackhawks winning the draft lottery kind of sucks because Bedard wearing Blackhawks red. Oh, I find that a little appalling.
Yeah. See, for me, I don't like, I love the city of Chicago. I spent a lot of time covering those teams, especially in 2009, 2010. Like, you know, I've covered a lot of their cups. Love Jonathan Toews as a guy. You know, I mean, look, I even like Duncan Keith. I'm sorry. You know, Patrick Kane, Patrick Sharp was a prince. Like, there were a lot of guys in that organization. And look, I understand what's happened since, right, from those above and just how kind of unseemly it all goes as it relates to Chicago. But as a city, it's fantastic. Can't stand the Chelsea Dagger song. So I'm not as personally offended as others. You know, for me, like, turn me off when it comes to Edmonton and Toronto. But other than that, like I you know, and even Boston, but Chicago would be a, you know, not even a fourth on the list of cities and franchises I wouldn't like seeing have success. So yeah, I'm not as offended as others, but yeah, when that song plays, look, it's not going to play when he tinkles Twine in Vancouver because they're not going to play that song for them. But you know, nonetheless, yeah, it's going to be disappointing. But look, all that said, Drancer, we knew this team was never going to have the best odds to win, right? No. It was just a case of, you know, could you get near it? And we never even thought they would get into the top five, right? And really, none of the teams that were in those windows, right, from 6 through 11 where the Canucks picked, none of them were, no, were teams that bumped up, right? So you can't look at this and lament Bedard, right? Like, you can certainly lament other spots up the food chain on the draft, but you can't lament Fratelli,
Fantilli,
Yeah, Fantilli, who you just said with the song with the Italian.
So you got caught halfway between Fantilli.
Yeah, yeah, I got caught halfway between. Yeah, and Adam Fantilli. So you can't lament those two. So I don't know. You know, I felt like asking Patrick Alvin in the presser, like, any regrets. But I didn't, just because of just how big that gap was, right? Like, they would have had to have been third from last, and there was a big gap after five that I don't think, even if the Canucks would have done anything differently, that they could have got into that top five. You know, if they would have played Demko a little bit less, if they would have played Pettersson and Hughes a little bit less, you know, maybe the Canucks finish with the seventh best lottery odds, right? Like, that kind of was the best case scenario. Well, really,
I asked about that at the end of season presser, the way that they'd handled the end of the season. And so I didn't feel the need to relitigate it tonight. Like, I wanted to hear from Patrick about the certainty of the draft process and get some color for a, like, Canucks React to the Draft Lottery Results column that I'll quickly scribble out tonight before I post some scouts polls tomorrow on who the Canucks should hope is available at 11. But yeah, I mean, look, the process is still concerning, right? Like, the underlying process of how the Canucks got here remains a concern. And the real cost always of going on the winning tear that they did and, you know, playing themselves well clear of Philadelphia and then in a nightmare scenario passing the Capitals, the Blues, and the Red Wings all on the last day of the season, like, it didn't come to bear in that none of those teams moved up, but those teams are drafting 8, 9, 10, right? And the Canucks are drafting 11. And there's a real cost to that, right? And that cost is likely to be Zach Benson, David Reinbacher, the best RD in the draft, Dalibor Dvorsky, maybe Ryan Leonard. Like, you know, there are better prospects than Vancouver will be able to select at 11, and Vancouver's still going to get their top organizational prospect. The moment they select that guy at 11, he's going to be Vancouver's best prospect and probably their best prospect in a while. Like, this is a prospect who is going to be unless they really go off the board or trade the pick or trade down, the best prospect that the organization has had since Quinn Hughes, right? Like, this is a big deal for the team, and they're going to have to get it right. Like, it's very, very much important that they land a real winner here and a guy who trends well. But, you know, there is a cost to the win streak that they went on. Now, here's the other thing that I think is worth noting, right? Like, Chicago went into this with what? The third best odds, 11.5? At the end of the day, the Chicago Blackhawks tanked hardest, right? Like, Columbus signed Gaudreau. Things went off the rails. They didn't really work to correct it. They waited till after the season to fire their coach. Anaheim, same thing. They brought in Klingberg. They traded for Kulikov. They were half pregnant in terms of icing a young team and maybe steering into the skid. But once the skid happened, both teams were happy to lie in their bed and maximize their draft lottery odds. The Chicago Blackhawks, however, they went out and dismantled their team, right? They've carved out millions in cap flexibility. Everything that wasn't hammered down must go, right? Brandon Hagel, it really started at the deadline last year with Brandon Hagel. But Patrick Kane went, Lafferty, McCabe. They traded Alex DeBrincat, who's only 25, right? I mean, they were all in on icing a roster that no one would suggest is NHL caliber. Like, I saw my colleague Mark Lazarus tweet out a thing that was like, first line, right? Reichel, Bedard, and question mark? And it's like, look, I like Lucas Reichel. But Lucas Reichel is not a first liner on the next great Chicago Blackhawks team. Like, until they landed Bedard, they didn't have a single player who's probably going to be on that team the next time they make the playoffs. You know, maybe Seth Jones, maybe. And they got rewarded for it. Like, they were the team that tanked with the most discipline. I hate how they conducted themselves in the past era. I hated Rocky Wirtz's defensiveness at a season ticket holder event a season and a half ago or 18 months ago. You know, like, it couldn't happen to a worse organization, but with new leadership in tow, including, you know, people from outside hockey, Kyle Davidson, Brian Campbell, they pursued the tank job, the best draft lottery odds they could possibly get, with more discipline and focus than anybody else by a lot.
And it was just a 2-year tank, right? Like, what did they pick, 7th last year?
Oh, I mean, they picked 7th because they traded in. They traded the DeBrincat for that pick. Like, this is a 1-year tank. They're only a year removed from trading the pick that a lot of us thought could be, because they made the Seth Jones trade. And if they'd won the draft lottery last year, they would have lost this pick in the deal. So, like, they were a lottery bounce away from not owning this pick. Columbus almost had this pick. That's how hosed they were by Stan Bowman. And it's preposterous that anyone's interviewing the guy who did the Seth Jones trade for a job. Like, forget all the moral reasons why his return to the NHL would be repugnant. He almost dealt this pick. It's only a bounce from the lottery balls last year that saved this pick for Chicago. And so they made an all-in trade.
That's a great point. Yeah.
They made an all-in trade 2 summers ago. 2 summers. They made, like, one of the most reckless deals I've ever seen. It blew up in their faces immediately. And over the course of 18 months, they've executed this tank job, and now they've landed the best prospect, like a once-in-a-decade quality prospect. And he happens to be from North Vancouver. So as much as I hate to see Bedard go to Chicago, and I do, you've got to commend, like, let it never be said that tanking, that teams don't tank, and let it never be said that tanking doesn't work. Chicago, they nailed it.
Yeah, you're right. So, like, there's no way around it, right? Because you're right. I mean, I've kind of been looking at this as a 2-year tank job, and when you look at how they acquired that pick, this has worked for them. And, you know, like, say what you want. I'm getting a lot in the comments about everything that happened revolving Kyle Beach and, you know, unforgivable stuff from the top down, right? So you don't want to see him get rewarded. But in terms of their methodology for how they executed, right, and not that every year there's not a Connor Bedard available, right? And when people look at this player, and it's going to hurt Vancouver more because he's from here, but, you know, reading everything that I've read on him, and I mean, I've watched what I've watched, but player or analysts with a sharper eye than I have him above Austin Matthews in terms of his ability to score goals.
Like, no question.
He's not going to be able to turn a franchise around like a Connor McDavid, right? Like, he's not as can't miss as Connor McDavid, but you tell me he's above Austin Matthews and I'm listening. Like, I'm picking up that phone call. And if ever there was a guy to do this for, this was the guy, right? So Chicago certainly got it right from that perspective. There's no doubt. And you're right. I mean, the other teams, you look at Columbus, and when they acquired Johnny Gaudreau, you didn't think they were coming into this season a tank, especially after what they did a year ago. They were the one team. You know, you thought Montreal had a shot at it as well, right, based on what they did with that roster. But, you know, even Anaheim, you kind of thought maybe had a shot based on what they were doing with their roster coming into the year. But in terms of pure discipline and in just unabashed form, we're doing this. We're not going to say it, but everything we do is going to say it. They did it. They executed it, and they won.
Yep. Good for them.
And now the Canucks are left with the 11th pick in the draft. Take me through some of the names. You certainly know them better than I. And I know on our regular version of the VanCast with Harm and I, we are going to get some analysts on. I think we've got to call in Shane Malloy and a couple of others. So we do want to get into some of these players on Wednesday that the Canucks could potentially be picking from. But one of the things Alvin was asked about tonight was the tiers. Take me through where the tiers lie, because there's obviously one with a bullet, and then after that, where it kind of falls. And, you know, Michkov is going to be a little bit of a wild card because he signed in the KHL through 2026, and that's going to scare some teams off. So in terms of true talent, he might be a top three guy, certainly a top five guy, but he could slip into that area where the Canucks might still have a shot at him.
Sorry. Who was that?
The Russian player.
Michkov?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's an interesting possibility. I mean, I think that possibility kind of went out the window when the Washington Capitals dropped below the Canucks. Like, if there's one team that's going to feel super comfortable, or at least relatively comfortable, given all the red flags around Michkov at the moment, including a very unusual contract status that will keep him in Russia through at least 2026. Mm-hmm. You know, in addition to other bits of uncertainty that surround him from the perspective of NHL scouts and managers. You know, the Capitals have Ovechkin, right? Like, the Capitals have a long history drafting and bringing over Russian-born players, including some who were very difficult to get over, like Kuznetsov. And they've gambled previously on, like, high-upside Russian players with, you know, uncertainty surrounding them, including Mirochenko, who they drafted last year, who was recovering from cancer. So, you know, Michkov, I think, doesn't go past the Capitals. That would be my strong supposition. Although, who knows, right? It's such a loaded draft class. And there are so many guys who have, like, really good upside or really good prospects, would have gone first overall last year with a bullet, like consensus poll-to-poll caliber prospects, who are going to still be available at, like, 8 or 9, that maybe the Washington Capitals prefer, given Alex Ovechkin's timeline, right, and what they want to achieve here. Maybe they prefer a guy who's a little closer to being NHL ready, like Colby Barlow, who, if you look him up and watch his highlights, like, look at the beard and stuff, he's 18 going on 29 as far as appearance and the maturity in his game. And again, like, would have been without question number one last year. So, you know, we'll see. I think the sort of names to know, like, first of all, the name to know is David Reinbacher. Like, Reinbacher's listed at 6'3", 190-pound, right-handed defenseman, Austrian, plays in the Swiss League at the moment, produced a ton of offense. Now, a lot of that offense was secondary offense. I don't know that he's, like, a really high-end offensive driver. He certainly wasn't against his own age group at the World Championships. I don't know that he really warrants in terms of value and what he is as a prospect. Like, he's not a physical guy despite his listed height. And I suspect he might list at 6'1 or 6'2 once the combine in Buffalo rolls around in a couple of weeks. But he's a righty. He's relatively big. He's a good skater. He's not going to run a power play. and he's not going to run anyone through a wall. And that makes me a little nervous in terms of a team taking him with a top 10 or a fringes of the top 10 selection. I just don't know that he's that caliber of prospect. But I do believe that the Canucks would, all things being equal, prefer to take a defenseman. So he's sort of the first big name to know. Then there's sort of the centerman, and there's a lot of them, right? Like there's some kids in the Western League, Danielson and Braden Jaeger, who's a super high-end prospect, but had a really inconsistent year for Red Deer. Moose Jaw, excuse me, is the Warriors. And then there's, you know, Oliver Moore, Gabe Perreault, the U.S. National Development Team kids. And there's the hope that one of the somewhat undersized but super dynamic, highly competitive wingers, whether it's Zach Benson or Ryan Leonard, get overlooked because of their height and fall to 11. For me, like if you're staring at a draft board and it's Benson or Leonard or Reinbacher, there's no question in my mind that you take one of Leonard or Benson, or should, just based on what they could be, which is like all-star scoring wingers who also are really high-end two-way players, as opposed to a guy who, to me, sort of looks like more of a you know, two-way second pair defenseman, even if he hits. The last name to be aware of would be, for me anyway, Dmitry Simashev, 6'4", 200-plus-pound Russian defenseman. Not a lot of live viewings on him because Russia obviously didn't participate in international tournaments. So a lot of the cross-checking scouts won't have seen him live. Could fall a little bit. I think he's the sort of guy who could really be worth, like more so than Reinbacher even, an 11th overall pick, and probably would be being talked about more widely in that range if he had any other type of passport.
Yeah, and you know, going through the list of names, certainly center is where there's the most depth. Do you think the Canucks are going to get a player, and I think Wags asked this of Patrick, given how deep this class is, do you think at 11 the Canucks could still potentially draft a player who could be in their lineup right away?
The Canucks?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's anyone available at 11 who's a next-year player. I mean, the only guy who could maybe be there, and I don't think he would be, there's two, would be Dvorsky and Barlow. Like, Dvorsky and Barlow, we're talking about guys, you know, 6'1", 190 pounds plus. So I think if you get either of them, you're kind of looking at a guy who physically could hold up in the NHL just in terms of their size and the relative maturity of their games. But like, you know, Leonard, you're looking at like a 5'10 guy, 170 pounds. Benson, you're looking at a 5'9", 5'10 guy, 160 pounds. Like, I don't think you're going to put them in the NHL year one. But Barlow, Dvorsky, if they fell, and I don't think either will, and I want to be clear about that. I think both are lock top 10 picks. But if either of them fell, maybe I could see it.
So we're going to take, we are going to go till about the bottom of the hour here. We're going to get to your calls. If you want to join us on the live room, or sorry, on the stage, I should say, this of course is the live room. So just raise your hand in the stage queue and we will get to you sometime here over the next 15 to 20 minutes. Given the fact the Canucks made the Roenick trade, so they're losing one of their two first round picks. They had the additional first round pick, which is 17th overall from the Islanders. That's now being moved to Detroit. Do you think there's any chance? Like, I don't see a scenario where they trade out. You know, do they trade down because they don't have enough picks in this draft and try to acquire a second along the way? But like, do you see them moving this pick? I think they're going to wind up picking at 11th. And this guy's, whoever they pick, as you said right off the top, is automatically going to be the number one prospect in their organization.
I think they will probably keep the pick, but it really can't be understated just how difficult this offseason is going to be to navigate from a Canucks perspective. Like, they have really planted a flag in the ground in terms of what they want to achieve. Like, I don't care what they say. When you trade a first and a second round pick ahead of a deadline in which you're a bottom seven team by point percentage for a right-handed defenseman whose deal expires after next season, you're in to make the playoffs next season. Like, I don't care what you say. You've telegraphed that. their intention is to be a playoff team next year and a playoff team with the potential to make some noise. And you're not going to do that. You're not going to even pretend that that's a reasonable ambition with Nils Åman and Sheldon Dries as your bottom six centers. And
no, but at the same time, they can't look, if they trade the pick for a legitimate, you know, whatever, second line or sorry, top four defenseman or for a center or whatever you say, they can't afford that player. Like they can't afford to trade the pick to get the player they want unless they are able to move other money.
It would have to be a trade in which you both move out money and get a player. I mean, it would be a really complicated deal, but I'm just saying you have like two assets that I think would be super intriguing to teams thinking about taking on one of Vancouver's inefficient salaries, right? Like, I think Besser and Garland, given the term left on their deals and another flat cap offseason, like, I think both of those guys probably need to be sweetened to be moved. Or you have to take back similarly bad money and maybe even sweeten it there too, because you're looking for a center or defenseman and those guys are wingers and the premium positions come with a surcharge. Even Myers might need to be sweetened, especially if the club's intent on moving that deal prior to paying that $5 million bonus. Like, if you're hoping to move Myers in time to benefit from that offseason sort of cap reallocation, like there might need to be a sweetener involved. And so you're talking about assets that teams might take bad money, that might incentivize teams to take bad money. Like, I think you're talking Pod Colson, Hoglander, and the first round pick. And I wonder if those will be tempting. Like, I do. I wonder if those will be tempting. Now, there's more realistic options. I could see the team maybe rounding into the conclusion that they have to move a Beauvillier or a JT Miller or a player they might in normal circumstances prefer not to trade in order to free up the money they need to complete their roster. That's probably somewhat more likely to me than them trading the first, but as they go through their options, as they work through their process this offseason, like, make no mistake, their options are probably going to be at a level where trading that first becomes awful tempting.
You want to get to some calls? You want to get to some listeners?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
We only have one hand raised at the moment, but if you want to ask a question, either comment in the body of the chat and we'll get to it, or you can raise your hand and come in the queue and we will invite you on stage. Now, if you're having issues with sound, if it sounds quiet to you, try putting headphones in. That usually solves the issue. We should really make a habit of saying that every 10 minutes when we do these, because we get a lot of people like our good friend Harrison who wondering how to figure it out. But headphones, that's the answer. Sean V, I'm going to invite Sean V up to the stage. Hopefully we have no issues there, and hopefully he's got headphones. Sean, do you got us? Sean, can you hear us? Looks like he's on the stage, so I'm going to give it a minute. Sometimes it clicks in a little late, eh, Farhan?
Yeah, we've been having that the last few live rooms, there's no doubt. But, it's funny because
I can hear your echo.
Have we got him? Okay.
Yeah, we've got Sean. Sean, go ahead.
You can hear me?
We can hear you. Yep.
Okay, perfect. Before I go full on Jason Brough here, I love your guys' work. Like, Drance, I've loved your work forever.
Thanks, man.
Farhan, yours too.
Thank you.
Of all the teams to win, like, Chicago is the least deserving. We all know what has happened. I feel like the NHL should have punished them with, like, not winning a lottery for the next 5 years and put them at 32nd. Drant, you said it kind of sucks for us that Chicago won. I mean, it really fucking sucks. No fan of, like, the other 31 teams wanted them to win. I think it's a bad look for the NHL. And the only thing I can hope for is that Bedard pulls a Lindros and just requests to come to the Canucks. That's pretty much it. The Canucks will probably trade their first round pick and there will be no Thomas Drantz erotica. That's all I have to say.
Sean, thank you so much for the call. I want to address this really quickly, okay? I want to address the Lindros Bedard thing. Because if you've had the opportunity to spend any time with Connor or talk to anyone who knows him, right? Like, this is a guy who, if Arizona had won the draft lottery, and let's be real, Arizona was always the team that, like, the Lindros conversation would have heated up if Arizona had won the draft lottery. We all know this. And yet, even that would have been for naught, because if you have a sense of who Bedard is as a competitor, right, he would have been like, my mission in life now is to make hockey the most popular sport in the desert. You know, he's one of those guys. He's one of those guys. There's no challenge too big. He's not in it for himself. He's in it because he loves to play hockey and he loves to win. And whatever challenge you threw at him, he was just going to eat that challenge for breakfast. Like, that's who he is. He's him. Like, he's that guy. And by the way, I love that guy. Like, that's what everyone wants. That's what Connor Bedard is. He's not wired to do something like that. That's just not who he is. He was going to take on whatever challenge was thrown in his path. Chicago, I'm going to rehabilitate one of the original six franchises, and I'm going to be the best player that I can be, and I'm going to work absolutely every day, full tilt, to achieve it. That's who Connor Bedard is. There was just never any chance he was going to do a Lindros thing. Whoever won this draft lottery was getting Bedard, and once you get Bedard, you have a fully bought in, extraordinarily committed. Like, you know, Weeks put it this way on the broadcast tonight, and I thought he nailed it. He said, any GM picking Connor Bedard is going to be able to sleep soundly at night knowing they've invested their future in Connor Bedard. That's it. That's it. Like, this is a Joe Burrow level competitor.
Well, and think about when
composure.
Think about when Connor McDavid, or when the Oilers won the draft lottery and Connor McDavid was there on the broadcast. Remember that awkward moment?
And what happened next? What happened next? Bob Nicholson, right? GM change.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they sold out to upgrade their organization. They had to.
Yeah, and certainly they're reaping the rewards of it right now. The game tied at 1, I think, as of about 5 minutes ago against Vegas. 2-1 for Vegas now in the final minute of the first. But, look, obviously a franchise-changing type of player. You follow Austin Matthews as closely as anybody, and you don't balk at all when the suggestion is this guy is going to be better than Austin Matthews. He's that level or then some in terms of can't miss.
No. I mean, here's what the statistics say. Okay. There are three players since the year 2000 who've scored 2.5 points per game or more in CHL competition as a 17-year-old. Number one, 2.7, Sidney Crosby. Number two, 2.58, Connor Bedard. Number three, Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
Like,
that's pretty
on.
Good company. That's pretty good company.
That's just by the numbers. That's without knowing what I know about Bedard, right? Like, this is a guy, Farhan. It's not just that Bedard is who he is. It's that, like, everyone he encounters has to level up to keep up with him. You know, like, and they all love him for it. They're not even mad about it because he just earns it. You know, it's not like he's a jerk about it. He's not entitled. He just, like, loves the game. He loves to work. He loves to watch, like, as a kid, he'd watch YouTube videos of, like, players doing cool things in NHL games. He'd go out on the ice. He'd spend an endless amount of time at open ice at the North Shore Winter Club, just, like, fiddling around, be like, oh, I saw that cool Austin Matthews drag shot. Like, his whole shot, which we've never seen anything like it, is derived from him being like, wow, Austin Matthews, I'm going to see if I can, like, that's who he is. And so, like, Matthew Wood, who's probably going to go in the top 15, one of the top scoring players in the NCAA, also the youngest player in the NCAA, from Nanaimo, 6'5", okay? Matthew Wood spent his age 16 season billeting with the Bedard family in Lynn Valley while he attended the West Van Academy. And so him and Bedard became friends. In fact, they were friends before because they were spring hockey teammates and their families grew close. So they'd, like, go work out. They'd go to West Van Academy, hit school, play together. And then they'd go home and they'd shoot pucks. They'd rip pucks all day. And now Matthew Wood is arriving in the NHL and or arriving at the NHL draft. And guess what? He's one of the three best finishers in the draft. And he talks about Bedard in like hallowed terms. You know, one of the hardest, the guy who has one of the highest work rates in the draft is Zach Benson. Why does Zach Benson have such a high work rate? Well, when he wanted to win playing winter hockey growing up in Vancouver, guess who he had to beat? Guess who he had to work at work every night? Like, it's Bedard. That changed his whole approach. It taught him how hard he had to work, how dogged he had to be in puck pursuit. He's the best forechecker in the WHL this season. He's the best player on a team that lost like 9 games all year. Andrew Kristel, same thing. Like, all of these guys talk about Bedard and his impact and how it pushed them. And they're all going in the first round. Like, this is a really special player, man. Just period.
Yeah, you know, and just watching the way he conducted himself at the World Juniors, like dominating the best. But when it all ended and he, you know, everybody asked him after every game about his ridiculous goal on any given night. And after they won and the reporter asked him, you know, about his performance and he stopped and he says, no, I'm not going to talk about myself anymore. I'm not going to talk about myself. I want to talk about my teammates. This is a team thing. And, you know, you talk about how while he grinds everybody into the ground in a positive way, like everybody loves him for it, right? And that type of stuff also resonates with teammates, that he's got a maturity about him right now.
Well, and you're the coach guy, and I'm just telling you, like, sometimes you cover athletes and they're enormously talented goofballs, or they're savants, or, you know, they're whatever, right? And sometimes you cover athletes and they're Batman, you know, and
yeah, yeah.
In terms of integrity, character, competitiveness, composure, like, there's no, forget the numbers I threw at you. There's no intangible that you can throw on a player or that you can throw on Bedard where the real life impact doesn't exceed the like collective meaning we've ascribed to that word, right? Like, that's who he is. That's who he is. Anyway, I'm going to invite Rich up to the
stage. Yeah, let's get Rich on.
Sorry, Rich, I got distracted gushing about Bedard. Would you like to ask a question, my friend? Do we have Rich?
Yes, you do.
Hey, bud, how are you?
Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. I got a question with all the Bedard focus. Sorry, it's not really on Bedard. It's just on with all the focus taken Fantilli with McTavish and Zegras. And saying, hey, you know, Rich, what? That's being overlooked. That what's that going to do for Anaheim?
Sorry, Rich. Sorry. Can I just ask you to confirm? Did you ask about Anaheim getting Fantilli and how that accelerates their rebuilding effort? I just want to make sure because you cut out a little bit.
During when you add that to Zegras and McTavish, and I think Canuck fans need to be concerned about that.
I think you're right. Thanks, Rich. So let me add this context. I think the Canucks dodged a bullet with Anaheim not getting Bedard. You know, not that Fantilli, and let me be real with you. I think there's a real chance that Leo Carlson or Will Smith end up throwing a curveball at the top of the draft order. I know Fantilli's been number two with a bullet, but read my piece in The Athletic tomorrow. There are scouts who really like Carlson, like who think Carlson's the guy. Ultimately, what it's going to come down to is if Anaheim thinks that Leo Carlson can play center, like if they view Carlson as a center long-term in the NHL, he might be the pick. He really might be the pick. Like there is a real chance that we're going to see drama, suspense, curveballs after Bedard goes. And that's not a knock on Fantilli, who's like, here's the thing to know about Fantilli. It's not just that he's 6'2". It's not just that he's like NHL ready size wise. And it's not just that he had one of the most successful freshman seasons in Div 1 history. Okay. He's also the fastest skater in this draft, probably. Like, he's probably the best skater in this draft. He's an incredibly rugged, physical player. And yet, Leo Carlson is a 6'3" high end skill guy. And like, I've got scouts dropping Kopitar comps. I've got scouts telling me that they think it's closer between him and Bedard than people realize. Like, there are teams whose mileage on Leo Carlson runs all day long. So, first off, I'm not sure if Anaheim ends up taking Fantilli or Will Smith or Leo Carlson. We'll see how that unfolds. We'll see what their particular view at the top of the draft is. But either way, they're adding an incredible player, a guy who would go first overall 40% of the draft classes over the last 10 years. And yeah, their build is scary. And, you know, you mentioned the NHL guys. So Troy Terry, McTavish, Zegras and company. But what's really scary to me about the Ducks is if you go across the CHL this year, the best defenseman in the WHL, like he won the WHL equivalent of the Norris Trophy, was Olin Zellweger, who's going to play next year. He's absolutely dominating. He's like well over point per game for the Kamloops Blazers. He's going to play in the Memorial Cup because they're the host team. You know, I'm told guy has like 6% body fat, lives at the rink. Just like one of those guys. I think he's a top four defenseman for the next decade. He's coming next year. Minchukov might be another year away, but he was the top defenseman. He won the top defenseman award in the OHL this past season. You know, 6'3", drawing Moritz Seider comparisons, although he's a lefty, Russian-born defenseman. Canucks were really high on him too last time out, but he obviously went before the Canucks picked at 15. And then in the queue, they have a kid named Tristan Lanneau, picked in the second round last year, right-handed. And guess what? He won the QMJHL Top Defenseman Award. So they have the current top defenseman in all three CHL leagues, none of whom are on their roster yet. And that's
You talked about this last offseason that, you know, for the Canucks.
I thought they'd be better this year.
Yeah, like you thought they were going to contend for a playoff spot this year just because of feeling their young talent had an opportunity to mature to that level at least this year.
Buffalo and New Jersey were my, like, young teams to watch out for.
Yeah.
2 of 3. I went 2 of 3.
All right, let's get to Greg.
But yeah, they're scary.
Let's get to Greg on the stage.
Greg, how are you? Greg.
Hi there.
Greg S. Greg Sansoni. How are you?
Greg.
Yes. Hey. Hey, I did the headphones, but yeah, you're on my phone now. Anyway, thanks for doing this. Much appreciated. I fully expect our management to go for position over best player available. I'm reading that behind Reinbacher, it's the Axel Sandin fella. Do you think that he's the next pick for us, or do we try and go lower for a centerman?
Thanks for your question, Greg. Axel Sandin, Palika, undersized power play defenseman. Like, he's got a clear way to play. He's going to be a PP1 guy, or at least that's what he's going to be drafted to be. Right-handed, Swedish, really good prospect. 11's a little too rich for him. And one thing that I sort of wonder about is, you know, how many 5'11 blue liners are the Canucks going to be comfortable trying to ice, right? Like, you know, Sandy and Palika, you don't make a needs pick necessarily because he's 2 or 3 years away at least. But projecting 2 or 3 years down the line, like, do you really want Hughes, Sandin, Palika, and Hronek all on the same blue line? Can you win in the playoffs with that? You know, I think that'll be sort of the question. Either way, I think the value is not there at 11. Like, I just don't think he has enough in terms of the roundedness of his game. Like, you know, look at the history of 5'10 and under blue liners who are picked right at the top of the draft. And you get a lot of, like, Brännström, Bockvist, you get a lot of that player type. And, like, you really have to be special. You really have to be Quinn Hughes to pay off that sort of valuation, just in terms of player type. Like, I'd compare it to Bryce Young, Farhan. I just worry that they're a little too small.
Bryce Young's going to be just fine, my friend.
Yeah, sure.
Rohan K, let's get him on. We want to get through these. We want to get through all these calls before we wrap up.
Absolutely.
About.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing well.
I have a question about, I guess, Abbotsford towards the last few months. Specifically, a couple of names kind of shot up, I guess, the way we see them going forward with Baines and Wu. Additionally, I guess I'm just curious about Höglander, considering his contract situation. Like, do you have an idea of what his next contract is going to look like and how his eligibility or waiver eligibility may influence whether we keep him or if we deal him, and then also if you know if Hirose is a guarantee to be on the roster next year. So yeah, just kind of curious about how things have changed in the last 3 months in Abbotsford.
Perfect, love it. So Rohan, I'm gonna go indexed here. Number one, you wanted to know about Baines and Wu. Was there anyone else? Harmon called me during the question, so I missed a little bit of it. Farhan, was there anyone other than Wu and Baines?
Well, he asked about Hoglander, right, in the contract.
Yeah, there. No, sorry. But those are the other notes. So let's start with Baines and Wu, two guys who really had like very promising seasons. I really like Baines because he's the star pupil. Like, he really soaked up all the instructions and the lessons that they gave him. Work ethic off the charts. They asked him to do some things that I think hurt his production early in the year in terms of adjustments to his game, in terms of the off-ice work, you know, working out or skating hard and then playing that night, stuff like that, where, you know, they thought he needed it to be at his best late in the year, and then he was. Really smart player, and that's going to give him the sort of dimension where it's not like he has to be a top six guy to contribute. Like, he could maybe be a really interesting fourth liner. You know, there's enough skill there. There's enough strength there. Really interesting, but not an NHL option, maybe a call-up option down the stretch next year, but that would sort of be like short-term expectations for him. Trending really well, looking like a really interesting roll of the dice for the organization as a CHL undrafted free agent. Wu was probably not going to be qualified 4 or 5 months ago. Really rounded out his game. Some Chatfield comparisons are being thrown around internally. You know, at the end of the day, I think you're looking at like a relatively low upside, sort of like one read defensive defenseman, but that would be a big.
But he has taken a step. Yeah, like
taken a big step.
No. So close to writing him off in this organization prior to this season.
Prior to January. He's taken a huge step. I don't want to undersell it, but I also think what we're looking at here is a guy who still, if he puts it together, you're looking at, you know, again, one read, third pair defensive guy with some physical value, still a huge find for the club, particularly if he's cost controlled. And kudos to him for putting himself in a position where he's a no doubt going to get a qualifying offer. And the organization's actually pretty excited with him, particularly given that he looked good on both the left and the right side for the Abbotsford Canucks in the playoffs. Nils Hoglander, what does his next contract look like? Two ways this can go. You either go a little bit longer on it. You go like 2 years at 1.3 to 1.5. That's a pretty typical structure for a guy with his level of production on his entry-level deal. The other way that this could go would be a one-year deal where you maybe even come in under the level of his qualifying offer, which is like 835K, something like that, or 875K. It's one of those two. You know, maybe it's 800 rounded, but you guarantee him a one-way deal because his qualifying offer could be two-way. So those would be the two ways that I could see that going. You know, in a world where the Canucks had cap space, like, Hoglander for me is the perfect guy to bet long on, because he hasn't quite hit, particularly after this season, but I think he's a no doubt NHL player. And I think he showed it in the American League playoffs when he was pretty consistently the best player on the ice, even in that series that they lost against Calgary, with guys like Zeri and Pelletier on the other side. Like, Hoglander was...
Yeah, but I mean, it's one of the few things your organization has done correctly, right? I mean, in that, if, you know, he was, I don't want to say force-fed, but he came up just because there was so many holes in the lineup that he was able to fill it, even if he wasn't necessarily ready right out of the gate. They had kind of made a decision before the year started. They were going to have him spend time in Abbotsford this year, and in doing so, I mean, you know, they over-ripened him a little bit and they suppressed his value a little bit, right? I mean, if he spends the year in Vancouver, he's a $2.2 million player right out of the gate.
Yeah. On the other hand, you also complicate the relationship with a guy. You know, so I mean, I could see a one-way deal. It's going to have to be a one-way deal based on how they handled him this year. And we'll see. I still sort of look at him, too, as a player who, you know, at the end of the day, if you're going to try and sweeten a contract, like, there's teams that would have a lot of regard for him as a trade chip. So we'll see, but you know, two ways that next contract looks, one way deal at 800K or a 2 year deal, somewhere between 1.25 and 1.5. Those would be my expectations by a significant amount. And then the third thing that he wanted to know about was Akito Hirose. Does he play in the NHL full-time next year? I'm fading that. I'm going to say he's going to sign a two-year. I'd expect him to sign a two-year deal one way, probably for in and around the league minimum, maybe 800K. And I expect him to start the season in the American League. He looked good. He looked comfortable. He looked pro-ready, which you'd expect from an elite NCAA player who's 24, 25. You know, at the end of the day, you watch like the AHL playoffs, right? And you watch Christian Wolanin, and it's like, man, that's tough competition. Like, it's really hard to earn a job in the NHL. Is he really going to be, like, are the Canucks really, first of all, going to return Wolanin, Hirose, Brisebois, Hughes, Ekman-Larsson, Hirose as like the six options on the left side, or are they going to try and upgrade that spot? I'd expect them to at least try and bring in an additional body to upgrade that spot. So then you're talking about he's not going to beat out Ekman-Larsson and he's not going to beat out Hughes. So he's going to have to beat out all of Wolanin, Brisebois, ex UFA and or like vet minimum guy who they're rolling the dice on. To earn a spot on the roster to start next season. That's tough. I don't see that. Like, I bet against it.
I agree with you. I loved what I saw from him. And truthfully, I think when he gets into the lineup in December or whenever that is, he's not coming out. He's going to be, like, Adam Foote's already fallen in love with him. And, again, you're right. They owe it to the organization to try to upgrade in their top four, get Ekman-Larsson into a three – a third pair role on the left side, but at some point there's going to be an injury along the way and he's going to get in. He's going to make it awfully difficult for them to move on from him.
We'll see. I mean, the underlying data from his cup of coffee was concerning. I'm not all the way there. I'm not sharing the market's Akito Hirose excitement. Looks like a good find. Don't get me wrong. Like I'm not, but, to expect him to be like a meaningful NHL contributor next season. I that's a little rich for me. All right. I'm going to
call up
Brennan L. Brennan, how are you? Brennan, do we got you?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can.
Nice. Okay. So I just have a couple questions. First of all, it doesn't seem like it, but is there any way of getting rid of OEL, like if they are able to send out the first round pick, is that in any way feasible? And is that a no-brainer if they could get rid of OEL by sending out the first round pick? And I also was just wondering what's happening with Ratu and Jack Rathbone, like what is their status at? That's it.
Thanks, Brennan. Farhan, I don't see an OEL trade happening.
Yeah, I don't see it either. And, I mean, wow, could you imagine the opportunity cost of having to package the 11th overall pick to get rid of that contract, which never should have been brought here in the first place? Like, just an organization that continues to spin its wheels if it goes in that direction, I don't see it. I truly don't.
Even then, I think you'd also have to take back bad money. Like, it wouldn't be as simple as OEL in the first and you wipe your hands with it. Like, you'd probably be taking back, either short-term pain or a similarly inefficient contract. Like, it's just too complicated. Rathbone's waiver eligible next season. I forgot to even mention him as one of the guys competing for a left side spot next year.
Wow.
But he requires waivers. Like, he requires waivers, and there's a lot of teams. Like, the Florida Panthers make a business of this, right? If you waive a somewhat high pedigree puck-moving defenseman before, like, at the end of training camp, the Florida Panthers will claim him, right? Noah Juulsen, Gustav Forsling, Josh Mahura, like, this is their business. Bill Zito does this. This is what he does. And he's not the only one. The Arizona Coyotes do this too, right? There's a few teams that are like very much in the business of aggressively perusing the waiver wire and giving defenders out of chances elsewhere a shot with them. I don't think Rathbone clears if he hits waivers, and I think he's going to be in tough to make the team. So You know, that could be one too, where the Canucks maybe find, like, maybe there's another like forward who requires waivers next season, who's on the fringes of a roster, and the Canucks and that team like swap guys to get sort of like first dibs. First dibs is in terms of a look at one of those guys that in a new situation in a new training camp. Maybe that's how it goes. But yeah, Rathbone's time with the organization could be up in the event that he's, you know, doesn't break camp with the team next season. And that might be a consideration. That's a storyline we'll watch in the offseason. And then the other guy was Atu Ratu. Ratu's got a ton of development time here. Like, he's Danila Klimovich's age. The skating is going to need some work, going to need some time. We'll see where it goes. But he had his moments in the American League playoffs. I thought this was a pretty promising season for him. For me, he's the organization's top prospect. Like, I'd pick him over Lekaramäki for the pole position, as The Athletic did when we did our prospect rankings about a month ago. But he's got time. You know, if he comes into camp and has gained a step and a half in the offseason, great. That's fantastic. But you're not counting on it. I think you're hoping that he's a call-up option for you next year and makes it hard to send him down. That's kind of where I think you have to be at with Ratu. Sean V has a follow-up. Should we allow it?
Yeah, last one.
All right, last question goes to Sean V, provided that he gets up on the stage, which 50-50. All right, Sean V did not get up on the stage. Sorry about that. So.
Can you hear me?
Oh, we can, yes.
We can.
Last question, Sean.
When it's on my phone in headphones, it switches. I don't know what happens. Sorry, I got a question for both of you. For Farhan, is there any update on the SFU situation? Because I think that needs more media attention. And then for Drance, what's more likely, an OEL buyout or JT Miller traded? And if it's Miller being traded, what's your preferred package back?
We'll start with you, Drance.
No, do the SFU thing, and then we'll end it with Miller.
The SFU thing, we're waiting for the judge to make a ruling on our injunction, which was heard in court last Monday. But still a lot going on our end. In fact, I'm about to get on a meeting after this podcast with our working group because, you know, regardless of what happens with that injunction, there's still a lot of fight and a lot of strategy and a lot of levers that we can still pull because we're not going to let this thing go away quietly. The university's made a ridiculous, unjust decision with really bad process. And disappointed that it's my alma mater behaving this way, and we're going to keep fighting it. But, you know, kids are waiting, kids are training. Some kids are getting nervous, looking at other options, but the majority of them still want to see this through, and hopefully we can give them the right result. You know, we're fighting because we want those kids that when they compete, they've got a battle, and we've got to do the same thing on their behalf.
JT Miller. It was JT. What's more likely, JT Miller OEL or OEL JT buyout? Miller. I mean, it's Miller, yeah. Right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
it's a much simpler move. The asset has value. You know, they wouldn't have to give a sweetener given how we finished the season. In my opinion, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but there's a trade there to be had. As we saw near the deadline, it wasn't that far away from happening. I think it's. Do I think JT Miller is going to get traded? No, but to the caller's question,
do not?
More likely than OEL. I still don't think he gets moved. I think it's going to be hard enough for this organization to add a third line center, let alone trying to add a second line center.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that.
I'm not saying they shouldn't.
They were motivated enough to do it that it got to the precipice, clearly, at the deadline. That feels like
what
a
you
bit
mean
of a
tell. You mean you don't believe Patrick Alvin that he only took a call from Carolina the morning of the trade deadline?
Does anyone believe that?
Well, there are some really weird people on Canuck Twitter that actually do, but hey, here we are.
So anyway, Miller's the more likely one. What's my ideal return? I wouldn't care so long as you get full cap space. Like, so long as you take only futures back, I think it's a pretty much a good trade.
But they won't do that. They won't do
that. They're going to require a center back, right? Like, yes, or 100%. They're going to require an asset that they can use to buy another center, which good luck. Like, good luck. So I think that's the reason the trade probably wouldn't happen.
And didn't happen, right? Because they were trying to flip
the one
player,
believe
right?
that. So. I don't believe that. That I don't believe, but I do think that's the reason it probably won't happen this deadline, in addition to the fact that I do think Rick Tocchet genuinely loves the player.
There you go. So both of us are of the opinion that JT Miller is going to be back for one reason or another.
Yep, I'd say more likely than not, but less likely than an OEL buyout. Okay, well, hey, that was fun. Nice to chat with you again, Farhan.
It's been too long, my friend.
It has.
I think the last time we talked was NFL draft, I think, when you were telling me Bryce Young shouldn't have been picked first overall.
He shouldn't have. CJ Stroud.
Well, I like both of them, so I'm not going
to
quibble.
And you don't like Anthony Richardson, who's going to be the best of the group?
You know what? I don't cheer for talent to fail. So let's be clear about that. That's not my jam. I would love to be wrong on Anthony Richardson.
There are
so many holes. It's going to take so long, and I think he's going to get force-fed too soon. But you know what? So much talent. I don't want to look back and say, what a waste. What a shame. I hope he does well. I hope he lives up to his talent.
I'm just excited that we have an elite running quarterback in a dome. It's the only thing I've ever wanted. And for some reason, between Hurts, Fields, like all of the great running quarterbacks that are in the NFL right now, we just don't have any of them that play their home games in a dome. It feels like a massive Lamar. Feels like a massive wasted opportunity. I'm so excited to see an elite running quarterback. Well, at least an elite runner as quarterback in a dome this season. It's going to be a ton of fun.
All right, bud. Listen, this was good. This was good. Canucks pick 11. Harm and I will be back on Wednesday for our regular edition of the VanCast this week. We're going to go Wednesday, Monday the following week, Wednesday, and then Monday the following week. And we'll give you lots of Canuck talk, NHL playoff talk, prospect talk, all of it. What's the score before we go here? What do we got? It was 2-1, and it is... what do we got here? It is still 2-1 with about 16 minutes to go in the second, and I am looking forward to watching the Warriors and Lakers later tonight, my friend.
Likewise. Be well. Right. Cheers.
Thanks, everybody, for listening and logging on. We'll talk to you.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.